Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the NXT review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review NXT, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, they're joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review NXT. And what did you make of last night's show with all the title matches, Michael Hamflett?
Good, really good. Short of thrilling for the most part, I have to admit, but very little bad. And I continue to have my trust gradually rebuilt in the process. The sometimes boring, the very transparent, but the formula of the fortnightly booking patterns of NXT with the stuff that looms in the background for TakeOver while presenting television ready stuff. That's very boring analysis of an art form, I appreciate, but I think we're still some way away from finding the perfect version of NXT as an art form. It's just been about watching the machine like kind of clunk back into life again, because it does produce episodes of television like this where I genuinely enjoyed it. I like seeing where things were going for almost every character. I keep going back to that thing the other week where we were Sidgwick pulling up the roster looking for an opponent to answer like an interruption promo, and there wasn't really anybody there, and there was more of that this week. Everybody feels included, everybody feels like they've got directions, and you're getting the little rewards because the matches, while far from five stars, are rewarding of your sort of 2 or 3 weeks of investment in these mini feeds. These matches feel so much more worthy than they did when they were hot-shotted this time last year. Had a good time with this.
There were some very good things on this show, some underwhelming moments as well, but I feel like the fact that I was underwhelmed is an actual elusive feeling I have towards this product. My expectations were really high for two matches, and one hit more than the other. The other really didn't hit for me at all, which is a damn shame. But the fact that I didn't watch this numb and blank and instead was, oh, that could have been better, oh, it's a shame they didn't get that bit of execution right, must mean, therefore, that it's capable now of creating expectations, which, to echo Hamflett's point, must mean that they are quietly doing something half-decent on this goddamn show after a wretched run.
Yeah, I thought there was the main event was really good this week. Really enjoyed that 2 out of 3 falls match. And we'll talk more about the other title match once we get to that. But yeah, like you say, a great show and a continuation of stuff we've been saying for the past few weeks of just how much NXT has improved since it moved nights. Let's dive straight into it then. The show started with a murder. Karrion Kross versus Austin Theory, non-title, of course. This built last week when Austin Theory complimented Scarlett on her nails and then inexplicably thought it was a good idea with Johnny Gargano to jump the NXT champion. So the match started with Gargano trying to encourage Austin Theory. It's fine. You've got this. It's fine. Theory's obviously terrified, but immediately comes in, tries to sort of jumpstart the match with Kross, punches, standing drop kicks. Kross just sort of absorbs it all, poised theory all over the place, takes it down with a stiff old clothesline. Cross is just battering him. Then Gargano, before Gargano can interfere, actually, Cross encourages Theory to reach for Gargano and then just stamps on his hand. Gargano then causes a distraction, jumps up on the apron. That allows Austin Theory to rake Cross's eyes, blinding him and allowing Theory to take a bit of control. They go to the outside. Theory throws Cross into the barrier, hits him with a DDT on the outside, hits a rolling drop kick and gets a one count. Uh-oh. Theory hits a fallaway slam on Cross, who just immediately fires straight back up. Two Saito suplexes, doomsday punch. Theory's out. But rather than a pin him, Cross chokes him out while staring at Johnny Gargano. The ref stops the match. Cross celebrates. And then post-match, Finn Balor pops up in the ring behind Karrion Kross. Balor says he doesn't wait in lines. He wants a title shot. And Cross says he wants the match just as much as Balor does. And, we'll get to when that match gets announced a little bit later on in the show. But what did you think of the opener, Michael Hamflett?
Match first, because I thought it was great. I kind of projected more of a squash, like even less than Austin Theory got, but I didn't hate what he got here at all. If anything, it gave the excuse for Karrion Kross to actually show some charisma on the comeback. So that was quite welcome. Absolutely no more than they needed here for establishing like who Kross is as a babyface, which still doesn't totally work for me, but it certainly works in contrast to the way as heels. Like at least Theory and Gargano are so good as heels that Cross can become the default babyface here, even if he doesn't really connect to the babyface every week. It's the benefit of stables. I know there's another one later on the show, so I'm getting a bit confused with them all running around. But
isn't it funny how they're doing like two more stables that there were a month ago?
This is what stables are great for. So like, again, here, you know, like I know you said we're going to mention it. I wasn't mad high on the post-match because it's like shortcut stuff. But again, with Cross as a babyface, there's an honor to offering Finn Balor a rematch now that he's kind of like reappeared back in NXT. You would assume he'll win. And they appear to be teeing up Gargano as Cross's takeover challenger, if and when he's to lose the North American title. Again, like just getting to see the wires a little bit is quite pleasing because it allows you to appreciate them doing the work. And I really enjoyed the presentation of Karrion Kross here. And I don't get to say that very often.
I liked the booking far more than I did the in-ring performance of Karrion Kross here. One of my key core complaints about the very worst of NXT throughout late 2019 and virtually all of 2020 is that it was so painfully obvious what the direction was, and I hated just how lifeless the actual build was and how perfunctory the build was. You got some boilerplate dialogue, some staring at titles. All of it was somehow made to look way better through a video package and then on to TakeOver. In direct contrast to that, you've got the perfect use or very good use of a stable building towards the actual match. And then in the meantime, you've got two splintered directions between Gargano and Bronson Reed and Cross and Finn Balor. Just to tie up any loose ends, not that they weren't perfectly sewn up at TakeOver Stand and Deliver, but regardless, it's still more interesting than the alternative. So basically, Karrion Kross has got two opponents looming, which is way better than just doing aimless stuff with one. Good. Good, good, good. I continue to think Karrion Kross is actively quite bad. I just do. I can't pretend to do cartwheels about him. I just think, just to echo the points on the preview very briefly, he's impossible to root for. He's so close to the line of parody. And for me, he just grunts past it. And again, even if I have problems with the idea that you're meant to root for this guy, I just find it drastically bad pro wrestling booking. I just do. Look at him. I understand Hamflett's point about the way there's an effective balance to that. But at the same time, if you're going to be the intense Colossus bastard, like resonate as one in the ring, that spot that he does, that they are convinced looks like, oh God, he's going to cave the back of someone's skull in if the referee doesn't intervene. It never looks like that, ever. He's just not good enough as a worker to be able to just pound the back of someone's back, head and neck with those elbows and forearms to make it look like they are like in trouble, lights out. Get him off him because something bad will happen if you don't. It just, the work looks actively bad, and I do not buy it.
Then we saw Leon Ruff bursting into William Regal's office. He's demanding to compete tonight, but he's not going to be cleared by William Regal. Bit of a yelling match. And then we got MSK versus Breezango in a non-title match. Nice bit of fun, this, especially when the referee did a drop-down leapfrog spot. Got a huge bap. Fandango hits a Falcon Arrow for a near fall. They hit that wonderful standing moonsault, push your mate onto him thing. But Fandango tackles Wesley into the pile to break up that fall. Big brawl. The champs get hit with some super kicks. Then there's a moonsault to the outside from Nash Carter. They get back into the ring. Breeze goes for an umpree, yeah, but they reverse it and hit them with the, I think it's called the end transmission for the victory. Nice bit of sportsmanship afterwards from Breezango, shaking the hands of MSK. I just love watching MSK on Wednesday, on Tuesday nights, Michael Sidgwick.
Yeah, I think this might be my favourite part of the show. I guess the main event was technically better and longer and all the rest of it. But my God, the experience of just watching MSK in these 10-minute mini-bangers on TV, I'm trying to think of a suitable analogy. It's a bit like just listening to a greatest hits set when you're nowhere near bored of the studio albums yet. I just love those spots still. They're still magic. They're still like take my breath away. They're still exhilarating. You got the added layer of just how show adjacent fun with the referee stuff, which sometimes it feels tacked on, this new fun directive, wacky fun directive with NXT, but they couldn't have picked a better dynamic. A babyface team wrestling a babyface team, and you kind of like both. You really like one and you've still got affection for the other. That's the perfect time to do this kind of stuff. You don't want a soulless emulation of what constitutes as a quote-unquote great pro wrestling match between these two teams. Like, you just want a bit of fun with it. You want to emerge from it, enjoying both. And I completely got that. More of this kind of stuff. Love that referee thing. Imagine saying, I love that NXT referee stuff.
It's MSK wrestle and the roof of the Capital One Center, the oppressive roof disappears and there's like a blue sky atop it for just a second. Like everything feels lighter. Everything, like, it's been the same since the debut. And long may it continue as well, because they're just like, they're really vital to this show at the moment. I think it's like hindsight already has proven putting the belts on them to be like a really great call, because I understand like the thirst for the chase and the babyface is having this grand moment of glory at TakeOver or something like that. But as NXT works at trying to establish a tag division again, if you're just tuning in and you see that these are the, if you happen to be channel hopping or you're a kind of casual observer of NXT, of which we know they've probably got some that they're not hooking, like these are the perfect act to see with the belts on them, because this is such a great presentation of like contemporary tag team wrestling that doesn't, you know, it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be like, the referee stuff aside, it's not going to like capture people's enthusiasm the way, say, a Young Bucks match would. It doesn't mirror like a cocaine banger, but it's almost like NXT's version of a cocaine banger. It's like, we're not going to go quite so hard with it. You can feel the agent's hands on it a little bit more. But it's not always necessarily a bad thing. I think MSK really pull you in. Obviously, Fandango, and especially someone like a Tyler Breeze, we know a kind of expert in the role as basis for this type of work. And this is what I'm talking about when I talk about like the trying to find ways to trust the process again. I think ultimately Breezango are going to turn heel soon. I think this is going to be a frustrated veterans losing streak gimmick. Like, only very delicate mention of it in the commentary and slight hesitation on the handshake at the end. But great. It's not like sledgehammer subtlety. They're gonna build to this, and at some point you'll kind of like Breezango have another go at this as villains. And that's new too. That's a new way to use these two. Because they're pretty bland. They're pretty bland as baby faces. As much as it's nice to like them, like getting another go of it as these fashionista arseholes, I think is gonna be quite good.
Yeah, I hope they don't go full Tyler Breeze working that program opposite Velveteen Dream. Like, I'm actually a great worker. It's like, what are you matches in recent TakeOver memory? Like, stay true to the characters, but in a more heelish way. Just to echo that point, I was convinced that MSK should have had the long chase, But ultimately, the reason why the long chase is so prevalent is that it's tried and true. It's virtually impossible to fuck up. If you can be an over-winning babyface act, just be that more than the chasers, and these guys are.
Yeah, and they called out Legado del Fantasma post-match, so that looks like where we're going next. But like you say, I echo what you both say about Breezango as well, in terms of they did just perfect for this role. But I did also think, all right, well, what else are they going to do? And then that little tease at the end, yeah, got me very excited for the future for those two as well. One of the advertised matches, Killian Dane versus Alexander Wolf, was called off because Wolf has a stomach bug, tummy upset. Although, put today in the news, it may be more suspicious than all that. Basically, there's a video that went up on the YouTube channel with Wolf basically saying, oh, yeah, the doc says I can't wrestle. And then the doc saying, no, he told me he had stomach flu. So intriguing to see where that goes next. And then we got a little comedy skit from Johnny Gargano, furious, bursting into William Regal's office yet again to complain about the fact he's got to face Bronson Reed and defend his North American Championship next week. And it concluded, Michael Sidgwick, very briefly, with Johnny Gargano snapping a pencil, which popped me.
I'll continue to hate the idea of an authority figure. I simply do. But, and this might be generous, but I like the contrast between Ruff and Gargano here.
Mm.
Like, Ruff, I still don't like the idea of Ruff being a little pissed off teenager getting told off by the teacher, even though the teacher, you know, it's even more patronizing that the teacher's looking out for this young kid. But maybe there was a deliberate contrast here, and there very much was. Gargano, as Hamflet's very astutely pointed out before, is the perfect, in fact, the only person who can get away with this kind of dynamic with William Regal. Good physical comedy, of which Gargano is just very good at these days.
Just a comparison to the Ruff thing. I was so pleased about, because it's actually people thinking about like how this show's supposed to look. It's people like trying to do their job as best as they can. Like, it's all behind the scenes stuff that I was there to appreciate about that. The contrast was nice.
Next came the highlight of NXT for one, Michael Hamflet, as they announced that, yes, we are getting the return of the biggest star in NXT since Pat McAfee. Todd Pettengill will be back to host NXT TakeOver In Your House on June 13th. I bet you just about that, Hamflet.
Yeah, I can't wait. As much as like I was sort of, I don't know, like I couldn't quite reach the highs of last year's first reveal of that logo. And the premise feels different this time because last year we were all in our house, and certainly in Florida, people have been back out since the middle of last year. This is nice as a potentially annual theme. Really is like really adds like that. Like even the graphic is just a splash of color to NXT. And the fact that they went from this to Everrise popping up behind the commentary team.
Yeah.
Again, it was just reminds like, oh, does this show know how to have a laugh once in a while? Like, if it does, like, it's going to be all the better for it. So, again, I'll wait with bated breath to see what things from In Your House's past are going to try and revisit this time, because they can't really just mine the same stuff as last year. So, my anticipation now is in what they might revisit to try and capture the magic the second time around.
One more and done. This one being the one more for me. When they're back in, like, big-scale arenas for takeovers, I don't need to see this. I just don't. Mm. It's kind of, you can mock it as a strategy and as a mentality, like they've got the oldest audience possible and they're just acknowledging that. It's fine, I enjoy it. But yeah, one more. I'm cynical about whether they can put the same feeling in me, but we'll see. We'll see.
Is there any chance, Hamflet, because I'm really hopeful for this, that we're going to get Todd interacting with more of the stars, because I would love to see, you know, him chatting to an Everrise, to a Cameron.
Oh my God, he sold it on us.
Yeah. Like, yes, is the answer. Second time around. So this time last year, of course, everyone was had to stay where they were. So yeah. he was doing the best he could in these like great green screen promotional pieces. A lot of people forgot about this. He made one appearance on a Royal Rumble watch along in, I think it was 2020. Which was this like nice moment when you never imagined that In Your House would come back, but also you never imagined a pandemic would hit. So it was just, oh, cool. Like Todd's back on terms. That's quite interesting. Maybe you'll do a DVD with him or something like that. It's this now. So yes, I expect him to be there in person. Like backstage interviews, like the, I don't know. Like, I just think they'll use him.
Maybe they'll do a DVD. Yeah, I can see why you like In Your House, Hamflet.
Oh, sorry, it's, you know,
it works special or a Blu-ray these days, you old bastard.
I realise my Freudian slip is because he did do a DVD and I bought it.
Then we got the lovely spot with Ever-Eyes, as you mentioned, plugging their talk show in the background. More of these boys on TV, please. And then we got the resident grumpy bastard of NXT. He came out. He called out. I used to live in Birmingham. I'm allowed to do the accent. He called out Karrion Kross for talking him. He vowed to become the champion. He said, you know what? For the time being, I'll issue an open challenge. Anyone in the back, come out and prove me wrong. And out comes, well, not out comes from behind. Leon Ruff attacks Pete Dunne. I couldn't work out whether, was he not cleared to wrestle, or was he was cleared to wrestle, but William Regal wouldn't let him wrestle, I think was the what I got from the earlier segment. So it's a bit.
Regal knows best.
Yeah, exactly. It proved to be the case because they immediately got the match, Pete Dunne versus Leon Ruff, and he got tortured. Obviously, joint manipulation from Pete Dunne. Ruff fought back, hit a Hurricane Rana, and went back to contorting your body, making you into a human pretzel. Ruff fires up again, hits a missile drop kick, but then Dunne lays him out with a forearm triangle, keeps raining down elbows basically until the ref stops the match. And then post match, Dunne snapped his fingers, didn't he? Because that's what he likes to do. Yeah, good stuff. This Sidge.
Yes and no. I like the attempts to pick an opponent that he could very easily beat, as explained away in the storylines. But it still continues to be something of a self-own of a booking method, this. Pete Dunne is complaining that in storylines, someone's ducking him. In reality, that to me scans as they don't really have a firm direction for him and they are just going to do, or they might, but it's not time to execute that plan yet. So they are just going to have him beat people for 4 or 5 minutes at a time. It's not great episodic TV. It just isn't.
I'm not like I didn't mind how the match played out. I like this Pete Dunne. I don't need a promo at the start, and I've got some issues with the Leon Ruff booking. But I do like this was like the Pete Dunne we were kind of introduced to when he became like a kind of a Brit Rez phenomenon before Brit Rez itself just ate itself again. Like he's cruel, he's like a mean heel that is a danger ultimately to champions. So I like this. I think this is serviceable stuff. If I do agree with Sidgwick, it sort of feels a little bit transparent that he's just in a holding pattern. Like again, there's no rank.
Pete Dunne as managed by Taz and Taz doing technique by Taz with Pete Dunne.
And with rankings, because it's like, oh, you've absorbed 2-3 pretty big losses, so you've got to start again and get back to bit. Again, there's none of that really. So it lacks that kind of like a background reading that would really help. The Leon Ruff thing's really tricky because like on it's a bit like giving on one hand and taking with the other, because it's like, oh, he's not going to listen to dad. And then 3 minutes later, it's like, oh, you should have listened to dad. So I don't know quite like he's not going to kowtow to an authority. And then just a few short minutes later, you're like, should have kowtowed to the old authority. Like, I don't quite know what I'm supposed to make of that. So all a bit, you know, half measures. Didn't hate it though.
I loved a bit later on where Oney Lorcan got a promo and said, Pete Dunne could beat Karrion Kross, he could beat Finn Balor, and he could definitely beat you, Kyle O'Reilly. And I thought, no, he can't. I've literally watched that happen. He can't.
All run.
But anyway, we've got a promo from El Legado del Fantasma with Santos Escobar cutting a promo on Kushida, saying he'll win his title back effectively. And it was then announced that Frankie Monet, the world premiere of Frankie Monet, is going down in 2 weeks' time. Perfect booking, as we suggested, Michael Hamflet.
Yeah. Again, like this sort of 2-3 week cycle stuff in between takeovers is the NXT I really, really like. You get just enough time to anticipate a match or a debut based on like only like a mid-level build up to something. They've had Frankie Monet as a bit of a stirrer across the whole division without giving you an opponent immediately to get excited about. So why would they just give one away now? Like, really like this and feel like this is there to potentially rev you up for her having something more significant at TakeOver In Your House. They've got the time if they want to build that.
I mean, it's good. They've established a character here. It's just good old-fashioned promotion. That's what this is. And theoretically, I mean, I don't care enough to do this, but theoretically, NXT fans will think, oh, well, who's the opponent going to be? Because everyone hates her. Everyone hates a complete dick who's just burying everyone in that sort of quite tremendous low-key way.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right, let's move on to our first title match of the night. It was the NXT Women's Championship being defended by Raquel Gonzalez against Mercedes Martinez. An enjoyable match, if I think, as you said earlier, Sid, slightly underwhelming this. Lots of brawling here. Fight spills to the outside. Martinez has Gonzalez trapped in the ropes. She hits a draping, twisting neck breaker on her. She hits a spear on the apron, which looked rough. In the end, we have Martinez countering Gonzalez as Gonzalez goes for a finisher hit. She hits a running knee strike and a suplex for a two count. But Gonzalez eventually hits a big boot and a signature powerbomb on Mercedes Martinez for the 1-2-3. Raquel Gonzalez retains. Well, I don't know. How do you feel about this match, Sig?
It was our worst night since Portland by some distances. Disaster's way too harsh, but it fell apart. Like the match fell apart at the worst possible time at which it could have fallen apart. I didn't emerge from it thinking Gonzalez looked like the woman, the actual ace of this division at all. I didn't emerge from it thinking, oh, Martinez, great to see her in the ring. What a fight that was. I'd like to see what she does next. Mm. Bad night for both of them. And I hate any reminder of what NXT and to a lesser extent the overall system is. It is a place where they are place, an profound, arrogant value on their own playbook. We know best. Triple H has actually spoke about this playbook years and years ago. I think ahead of NXT arrival, talking about how when you come to work for us, you run our playbook because we feel like we know how to succeed, irrespective of whether the individual talents are good at doing the playbook or should really be promoted as what they are good at doing. And that has felt the ambition, the imposed ambition of this match made it fall apart. It was a match that made me less high than I was on Gonzalez. Reinforced my belief that the way of that NXT does things generally is not it. And I was just disappointed.
Yeah, same. Clunky, like an overthought. I think that's it. Like, I found myself too often, especially in the second half of the match, not being able to just watch this as a fan and instead hover above it and, like, kind of, like, to echo Sidgwick's points, really, like, find faults with, like, the bigger picture rather than just being able to concentrate on this much smaller one. Because what that does, ultimately, less so with, like, Mercedes Martinez, but certainly with Raquel Gonzalez, is it just reminds you that a lot of these wrestlers to Triple H or to Shawn Michaels or whoever is backstage there are just moldable bits of clay to them. And they like their molds shaped a certain way. This is not to the, you know, I'm not being critical of this to the extent of, say, Rhea Ripley on Raw currently. like not by a long way. And that's something that's noticeable, is that gap is starting to widen again between NXT and the main roster. And that's no bad thing for where we were for most of 2020. But yeah, I don't want to see that, and I don't want to think about that. We were so full of praise for this booking because it just made so much sense. Hoss battle, fight, like let the wrestlers wrestle the way these women are built to wrestle, which is to just beat the out of each other in a way that like looks convincing because look at the size of them. They got this formula so right with Gonzalez and Rhea Ripley back at, was it Halloween Havoc or New Year's Evil? Like, Halloween, New Year's Evil. They got the formula so right.
The two.
What a fight that was. That second one, especially if it was two. So it's all more perplexing how this missed, because it was. It just felt overthought from the off. And as much as it was like, how it was executed that kind of took me out of it in the second half, you could feel it earlier on. That like there was a feeling very early on the match. It's like, oh no, like this just isn't going to hit in the way we thought it would. So yeah, bit of a shame this.
Then we found Bronson Reed backstage. He'd been attacked by Johnny Gargano and Austin Theory. More on that in a little bit of time. And I'll let you know what happened next, because you two, let's be honest, you're pretty wiggity whack when it comes to this sort of thing, and I'm far more fresh. When talking about Swerve and his new stable, Hit Row, he came down, he got a promo. He said he's made mistakes, but his biggest mistake was trying to be the what people wanted him to be. He said what he really is a savage. He's disrespectful. He's a dangerous man. He had to recruit people that believe that about him, and he introduced his teammates. AJ Francis is now known as Top Dollar. I will not attempt to recreate what he did. There's a line, and I know I can't attempt that. So it was great. I thought this Ashanti the Adonis was there as well, just boasting and showboating about what a great stable they are. We also got B-Fab from the group. As I mentioned, this group is now known as Hit Row. And yeah, fresh. What do you think, Sidge?
I thought this was awful, man. I thought this was the names. Jesus Christ. Top Dollar. B-Fab? I mean, Hoey. Like, Hoey. Not for me at all, this. I couldn't tell whether it was a bad execution of a bad idea or if this stuff simply will not work in the incredibly WWE, shall we say, environment. But I just thought this was awful. I was cringing for them. Like the background noises of like, tell them, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They were so like off kilter. There was no sense of like chemistry. I mean, they've just been together and thrown on TV for the first time this week. I'm not enough of a dickhead to not like acknowledge that. But it was just, I couldn't believe a word they were saying at all. Couldn't tell if the rap was meant to be bad or meant to be intimidating. This is just rubbish. Am I being harsh?
No, this was good if you didn't watch or listen to any of it. So like if somebody told you, oh, there's a new stable called Hit Row, they've brought together some mid-carders. There's a chance they might get over. It's important to have a stable on NXT when like there's evidence that it works elsewhere. You're like, oh, all right, I'll watch this, and I'll maybe like whoever the first program is with, then that babyface is going to be in bother and they're probably going to get over his heels. You've got a woman in the group, as you do with The Way, which is great because you can skew multiple divisions as stables. That's proven successful as well. Just don't watch or listen to any of the presentation and you'll love Hit Row. It's like, the rap made me think of the butt out safety group in the smoking episode of South Park. Right, the other's like, hubba, 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 hubba. If you don't smoke, you can grow up to be just like us. And it cuts to all the boys smoking behind the school straight afterwards. Yeah, can't like just write this off as a complete disaster because it's week one and, you know, things can turn around and it's never going to be like, look, the low bar has been set by Retribution. They're not going to limbo under that. Not great, this. And you know, there was an image that dropped last week after Swerve got his win. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, that's his new group. You know, when they're all leaving together and you saw them late, and they'd already posted that first image of them as a group to establish this idea that they haven't just come together overnight, they're mates, whatever. Like, fine. Like, I wish all we had still was that image and not this.
Fab. Oh, where, man? And Hitmo, it's they of the NXT creative team have, in my opinion, in what appears to have happened, have traded on their very, very, very shallow knowledge of ancient hip-hop, like, name, that's what I'm looking for, conventions.
Yes.
B-Fab, Hit Row's Death Row. It's like, could you not have, like, not done that? Please.
Maybe you just didn't get it because, like, unlike me, you didn't grow up on the mean streets of Chesterfield. But, you know, some people get it, some people won't. I'm just updating my notes then.
Hit Row, not fire. Put an S in front of it, and that's what the Dudleys think of it.
Okay. all right. What came next was great because it was... And he was at an auction this time. He was trying to buy a house, looked very fancy. And he was baffled by the auctioneer, which tickled me at first off. Why's everyone talking so fast? I don't know why that got me. He's going back and forth. People are holding up paddles. One of the paddles is obscuring someone else's face. Anyway, Cameron Grimes thinks he's got the house for like $8 million. When? Who else? But Ted DiBiase comes in with a $20 million bid. Not great, that. You're probably going to be living in negative equity. So think more about that, Ted. But anyway, obviously another conniption fit here from Grimes. He's furious. And DiBiase says, everyone's got a price for the $1 million man, but you are no $1 million man. And Grimes flips out yet again. More good stuff this, Sige.
That didn't really hit for me, this one this week. It was mildly amusing / cute that Cameron Grimes, the beautiful idiot, doesn't know what an auctioneer is. A bit cute, but there was no punchline to this one for me.
Yeah, you're not sat there popping, are you? You kind of do that. Oh, yeah. Like it's not really even a laugh. It's an acknowledgement that a joke was told. Yeah. An acknowledgement of an attempt at a punchline isn't really you sat there laughing. Fine. I kind of wish they'd folded this into the promotion of In Your House. Like, why doesn't Cameron Grimes try to buy the house that they believe that TakeOver is set in? Something like that. I think he could have probably been a little bit more creative with that. Ted DiBiase was a feature for a lot of those In Your Houses. He had his corporation. Now is the time for Cameron Grimes to set up his corporation, only for Ted DiBiase to... Like, if they want to do, and they love these things, if they want to do one of those nights where a bunch of legends beats up a current guy, why doesn't Cameron Grimes threaten to get his own corporation together and just one night... You can have like DiBiase and IRS and Tatanka and anyone else in that group that's still healthy enough. Like just laying a few shots on Cameron Grimes as a one-off segment on In Your House because it like hits that exact period of time as well. That's one of those times where it's not like the Ascension getting decked by the APA for no reason. There's actually sort of a bit of storyline. It's like Heath Slater getting beat up by the Raw Legends. You can do that sort of sparingly. You probably get away with that here.
Depends if Tatanka's too busy having so much fun backstage on Raw Legends night. We'll see where.
Here he is, Michelle McCool, his best friend from the past.
Promos from Zoe Stark and Toni Storm. Stark says Storm is jealous of her because she works harder than her. They're going to face off next week and she's going to destroy her, basically. More good stuff with these two. And then we got Cool Kyle O'Reilly. This was set up earlier on in the parking lot. Oney Lorcan just had a go at him, basically, and they set themselves up for a fight. Look, these two are incredibly talented, working together. Obviously, grappling looked great. Then they go into a sort of MMA strike battle. Pete Dunne's at ringside for Oney Lorcan. He distracts O'Reilly, which allows him, Lorcan, to take control with a bit of a sneak attack. O'Reilly, after the break, makes a comeback. It's a brain buster and finishes it all off with the flying knee drop to get the pinfall victory over Oney Lorcan. Post-match, the numbers game, though, cashes up to Kyle O'Reilly. Lorcan and Dunn jump him when who should run down to make the save? But Bobby Fish, he's back after, 5 months off, I think it is. They clean house, and then there's this weird yelling exchange of like, all right, mate, how's the wife and kids? Yeah, good. He's good to see him back, but he's doing his own thing. Fish said he understood that. He's got his own scores to settle. I'll see you when I see you, sort of thing. Bobby Fish is back, Michael Hanfler, and they didn't just go, you two are undisputed era. I quite like this.
Yes, me too. All of this was good. None of it was great. Match was good. Well worked. Kyle O'Reilly is turning down the cool Kyle stuff when he wrestles, which is a big plus because I feel like we're very, very stuck with it in his promos. Oney Lorcan's good. Great chemistry. I wasn't bored. You know, like I wasn't electrified, but I wasn't bored. Bobby Fish comes back. The stuff is cheesy because they're shouting at each other in the middle of the ring. That's a curse of WWE production. We're stuck with that kind of stuff forever. But yeah, I'm with you on the Undisputed Era stuff as well. I didn't think this was too heavy-handed. It is okay for these two to be mates and yet acknowledge that there's been a parting of the ways. I like this Undisputed Era split the more that nothing is happening with it. Roddy Strong has gone. Adam Cole is by the pool pretending everything's fine. Kyle O'Reilly is cracking on. Bobby Fish is we think going to crack on. I like this. I didn't care for it at all when it was actually happening every week.
Yeah.
But them actually struggling as human beings to cope with the aftermath of it is something I'm quite into. They might be onto something here after all. There might be something to salvage from that wreckage.
I didn't hate remotely the idea that there doesn't have to be a reconciliation. There doesn't have to be a breakup. These could simply be two real human beings that have an interior life. Just thank you for that. Like a small glimpse that there's an attempt to make this feel lived in and real. I won't remember this match beyond the experience of watching it for a million years, but, you know, there's one little lush moment where Kyle O'Reilly was just lunging fists into Logan. It's one of my favourite things that a pro wrestler can do. When you're not hitting someone, make it look like you nonetheless wanted to hit them really, really hard.
Mm.
Kyle O'Reilly's a master at that because he's a masterful pro wrestler. I continue to not enjoy the cool Kyle character, but I'm stuck with it. And I'm hoping that I like the man enough, and I do, that everything will be okay. But that's a very subjective take. On an objective level, people are laughing at this. Like in certain, there's certain circles of Twitter that you don't know how much stock to put in are laughing at this, and they tend to realize or grasp what is about to fail or succeed on some level.
Two big announcements came. I'm not sure if they were together, but I've put them together in my notes here. Bronson Reed announces he's going to challenge Johnny Gargano for the NXT North American Championship in a cage match next week. Cannot wait for that. And we are getting, yes, as I mentioned earlier, Karrion Kross versus Finn Balor in 2 weeks for the NXT Championship. So, Sage, what do you reckon to this booking?
It's a WWE steel cage match, so it's automatically bad before it's lowered. However, and this is some celebration of Johnny Gargano, if anyone can get over the abysmal layouts of your typical WWE steel cage match, it's Gargano. I want him to sprint up that bloody thing the second the bell sounds. Like, Gargano will do a good comedy cage match, I think. An awful, bastardized stip in the hands of Gargano will be very good, I think. It's one of those rare feelings where... Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, are we getting a tsunami off the top of the cage?
Jesus Christ. I hope not.
Yeah, go on, do it.
That's the finish. That's the finish, I think.
That's if they're going to transition Gargano from the mid-card title division, which he loses, then challenges for the heavyweight title. There's mileage in him saying it was unfair or something like that. I don't know. We'll book the finish on the preview, as we so often do. As for the other match, fine. You'll get a rating. You'll further solidify Karrion Kross as the ace. It's just something that WWE does. One rematch will be fine, and Karrion Kross could hopefully learn how to hit people properly or pretend to hit people properly, working with someone who can very much do that in Finn Balor. It's going to get a rating, and it's not yet totally and utterly dry. So go for it.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? Your excitement for this rematch is almost entirely dependent on how much you like the first one, or indeed like the work of Karrion Kross, brackets general, or Finn Balor, brackets the last year or so. As somebody that doesn't care for any of the above, I'm not exactly hyped, but I got some admiration for them doing it. I think like it's a way to get Finn Balor out of the way without feeling like you're getting him out of the way, which is how wrestling should work. You don't want Finn Balor to feel like this buried entity by the end, and he's not going to. It's just going to turn out that Karrion Kross is the better man, probably, and Finn Balor's got to go and find something else to do for a while and find himself and figure out a way back in the title picture. I didn't laugh out loud at Cameron Grimes, but I did like have a bit of a chuckle for them running that like what appeared to be self-made Marvel type vignette for the way, only for then Bronson Reed to be like, I'm in a cage, and nullifying the entire threat that they'd established in that graphic of like, I'm keeping it on the outside, there's nothing you can do. I thought like putting them two things next to each other on the show by design was really quite cute, like unusually so from NXT. Like, nothing can stop these superhero figures the way. I've got a cage. Done. I like that.
And yet, we all know that he's probably going to hit the tsunami with all three members of the way on his back, like off the ladder to poor Candice LeRae. Right, let's get on to the main event. 2 out of 3 falls match for the NXT Cruiserweight Championship, Kushida versus Santos Escobar. And I have to say, I love this. I thought it was great. They nullified Legado del Fantasma almost immediately. They almost immediately tried to interfere when MSK just dived through the crowd and referee ejects both teams. So we just get the one-on-one match we were hoping for. Now we go to a break. Come back. Escobar is in control. Kushida had wiped out on a dive. Escobar's target in his back. He's got single leg crabs and the like. Kushida starts making a comeback. Back handspring, back elbow, drop kick. Escobar cuts him off. Phantom driver. 1, 2, 3. Santos Escobar gets the first fall. Very quickly, we get the second fall, in fact, because Escobar's trying to take control and dominate and make use of the fact he's already just put him down for one. When Kushida gets him in the cross-arm breaker, and Escobar isn't an idiot. It's a 2 out of 3 falls match. Why fight and scratch and claw for the ropes when you can just tap out relatively quickly, as Wade Barrett pointed out on commentary, and you're still in the match and you haven't suffered as much as Kushida already has in it. They go to the outside, and, well, Kushida has just got a target on Escobar's arm now. Escobar, though, fights back, snaps him on the top rope. Tornado Tope Suicida through the ropes. Kushida fights back, gets a flying knee on Escobar, targeting the injured arm from earlier. Kushida hits a shoulder breaker on the floor. But Escobar, when they get back in the ring, gets a small package for a great little two count. They trade a few near falls, and then they get up. They're fighting on the top turnbuckle. Kushida hits a Spanish fly into a hoverboard lock. Wonderful, that. But Escobar manages to reach the bottom rope to break the hold. Kushida then just suplexes him straight into the turnbuckles, goes to do it again. But this time he suplexes him into the ring, and he's trapped the arm of Escobar, already injured. He bridges Kushida into a cover, and Escobar is powerless to kick out. 1, 2, 3. Kushida wins. Kushida wins 2-1. He retains the Cruiserweight Championship. And I thought we had a great main event. What did you think of it, Hamplet?
Yeah, I like this a lot. Appreciated the construction end to end. We talked about the inclusion of MSK and Legado del Fantasma on the preview, and there being some way, ideally within the first fall, to kind of get them out of the way. We maybe didn't establish Fantasma as a threat, but they've done the work in terms of that tag title match.
Yeah.
Like, really, really impressively so, considering when we all kind of had Fantasma as the third team in a triple threat to take a fall back at the last takeover. It's quite something that they've like done the work to get to a TV match between these two teams. So I like that. And it did, it kind of like brushed all the mess away. So let's get on to the match. Let's see what the two wrestlers can do. I saw thought throughout the show, and it was on show in this match, not just the tap out now, save yourself for the third and final fall thing, but the fact that we're going to go to a break, guys, but this is a sporting contest that doesn't take breaks. So the match gave you that fall right as you were kind of preparing for NXT to roll on. You know, like they played with their own format to make that fall a little bit more shocking and a little bit more exciting than it would have been. And again, it's just like the minor details. It's just nice to see them paying attention to that. And the heart of the third fall was in how much you, especially towards the end, like how much you bought the damage to Escobar's arm and elbow. Mm. And I bought all of it. Like, really, really well sold. I am probably guilty of this, not giving Kushida enough credit for, like, how good, even now in NXT, with the formula lingering over his matches, how good his like limb work can be. I love his flourishes later on when they keep his matches, when they time his matches right. I think his flourishes are stunning. Got a lot out of this. Didn't hit like that kind of like any kind of like match of the year conversations or anything like that. But I don't think my expectations were there. It's really, really enjoyable. Like I'm buying Escobar or something more than I did when he had the belt. That standoff at the very beginning where Escobar did this like Hogan double bicep flex as his graphic came up on screen, seemingly independent of the production, where he just kind of like, like just screamed in Kushida's face. I was like, oh, you're somebody. I never felt that when he had the belt. So they're getting somewhere with him too. Like a success, this, if not one that I'm doing backflips over.
Yeah, it's, my takes on this are odd because it was obviously a very, very good match without hitting the great level for me. And I thought the last 10 minutes was sublimely worked. But I thought it was a very, very good one-on-one singles match and a pretty bad 2 out of 3 falls match. Not for what it was, because I did like the logical thread of him tapping, knowing that he had another fall. I thought that detail, a handful pointed out, was tremendous. Vic Joseph went a little bit overboard on the stop the truck, stop the truck, stop the truck. Like the fall's happening before we cut away. But the fact that they did it nonetheless was still like really well, like just good, attentive, immersive pro wrestling presentation. But I just think I was talking on the preview about how much I love the 2 out of 3 fall step and how much like how much you can play with it, how much drama you can extract from it. It felt to me like an inconvenience to the match. Thought the first fall was anticlimactic. It didn't help that he wasn't in position for the ropes. So it felt less like a pinfall. It just felt like something he was going to kick out of, which is the other side of the coin in a 2 out of 3 falls match, because you're going to have to kick out of something you wouldn't ordinarily do because you don't want to exhaust all your best stuff before the finish. But there's ways to do that. And again, this is never going to be a card or a mega. I don't think any match ever will be a mega, a card or four. But that pin on the first fall of Dominion 2018 will just live with me forever for how hermetic the execution was and how much I bought it. It just felt like an anticlimactic spot, and the fact that it just happened a minute later, there's issues with the selling there and there's issues with the drama. I just think they could have booked a much better 2 out of 3 falls match than they did. Just felt like an inconvenience to the story that they wanted to tell, which is really good with the arm work. So I really liked it, if I don't consider it a bit of a missed opportunity to tell a great 2 out of 3 falls match here, when in fact they just settled for a merely very, very good TV main event.
But I thought both guys came out of it looking better, as Hamflet said there, and excited to see what happens next. And we've got some great episodes of NXT to come, a cage match next week, and then the week after that, debuts, in-ring debuts, and of course the NXT Championship match. Show's getting good. Stick with it. Let us know your thoughts on NXT though on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflet at
Michael Hamflet.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. As I said, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts later on today. Myself and the Daddy Boys sitting down to preview AEW Dynamite. But for now, this has been the NXT review. My thanks to the Daddy Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.